Hello and welcome to the Open Systems Media Safety and Security Virtual Summit. I'm Kurt Schwader, Technical Editor at Open Systems Media and today's host for Session 1, Strategies for Code Analysis, Metrics and Documentation with speakers Alan Zukic from Clockwork and Dr. Xavier Forneri from Esterel. Today's briefing is scheduled for about 50 minutes, leaving a 10-minute Q&A at the end. Before we begin, I'd like to run down some features of your audience console. First is the Enlarge Slides button. This button will maximize the slides to fill your entire screen. Clicking the Download Slides button will allow you to download and print the slides if you'd like a hard copy to follow along with. The button labeled Forward to a Friend enables you to send an email to someone that will include a registration link to the ECAS so they can also attend. The Ask a Question text box and Submit Question button allows you to participate in today's eCast. Simply type your question into the text box and submit it by clicking on the button. We encourage you to do so early and often while the question is fresh in your mind. We'll be doing our best to address them during the closing Q&A. If you have any questions or problems pertaining to the eCast operation, submit those too and our technicians will respond to you. Finally, this eCast will be posted online immediately following the session, and an audio podcast will also be made available. We'll talk about this more at the end. For those of you familiar with the book Code Complete by Steve McDonnell, you might remember a brief section that talks about the industry average being between 15 and 50 errors per 1,000 lines of delivered code. This average brings to mind two key questions: how to further minimize defects, and how to prevent serious problems when they do happen. Today we're pleased to have with us two experts in the field of software analysis who will be presenting on software risk in safety critical systems, its ramifications and techniques for identification and prevention. Our first speaker today is Alan Zukic, Clockwork's Director of Product Management and sets the company's product direction. With a technical and consulting background in the telecom equipment and software tools markets, Alan has helped hundreds of organizations successfully deploy source code analysis technology within some of the most demanding and complex development environments around the world. Alan, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Kurt. So for today, what we're going to do is give you a brief overview, especially to solve the problem, how we manage software risk, especially in safety critical systems. So, as everybody knows, bugs happen, and there's all sorts of realities that we can talk about when it comes to these bugs. Let's take a few examples that are obviously a little sensational in how they turned out in the real-life world, but something that will give you an idea of what's going on. Now, are these something that were critical? Well, yes, you take the Therac 25 radiation machine. Well, that involved at least six incidents where patients were actually given massive overdoses of radiation, and in their case, over 100 times the intended dose. And what happened? Well, the impact was obviously quite severe. Obviously, radiation burns, symptoms of radiation poisoning, et cetera. But obviously, worst case here, in addition, there was a death of three patients due to this type of situation. Now, what caused this? Well, the reality of it was an actual software design bug. In this term, in this case, it was determined to be in what was called a race condition. So, yeah, obviously, even a software bug can cause significant death. Everybody's familiar with the Toyota Prius and all its great glory that it's had in the recent years. Going back to 2005, it had an announcement of over 160,000. Recalls of the Prius hybrid vehicles due to some warning light illumination and unexpected stalling. But it was determined, unlike all what everybody was used to with a lot of vehicles, was most of the recalls were due to hardware. In this case, wasn't. It was actual software bug that was in the smart car's embedded code. And then in 2010, people are very familiar with some of the anti-lock braking systems that resulted in another 100,000 vehicles that were recalled. So Toyota has been plagued by a number of software bugs and certainly a lot of reasons why they've done a lot of changes to their software development practices. Or probably the most infamous or probably most costly bug that's been known out there is the one that cost over $370 million, which was the Ariane 5 flight, which was veered off its path after 37 seconds from its launch, and then it self-destructed. So it lost a few of their cluster mission spacecraft. And again, this was a software bug, and probably most infamous integer overflow in this case. So you can see tons of different types of bugs happen. And continuing on with that, I thought this one was a great example because it personally affected me and what I was doing at that particular time. So there's a story behind that, and I'm sure some of you on this call have a story as well. This was the blackout on the East Coast. This was something that happened in the summer of 2003. So it was a massive electrical blackout. 55 million people across northeastern U.S. and Canada was without electricity. And so tons of things happened. Water supply interrupted, airports, trains, shutdowns, cellular communications disrupted, large factories closed, all sorts of impact associated with it. So this is what it looked like before the actual blackout. And here's what happens just 7 hours after. And you can see a number of cities, including where I am right now, Ottawa, was completely in the dark, along with a few others like Detroit, Cleveland, Toronto, etc. So this, again, was stemmed from a software bug. And this was similar to the Therac 25 radiation machine. Another race condition caused this to happen. So obviously, realities of software risk are there, and certainly happen in safety critical systems. And you know, you take the worst cases of the costs associated with them, or even deaths that are associated with these types of bugs. And I know these are really sensational issues that have cost millions. But I'm sure those of you on the call can think of some bugs and some sort of software that you've worked with at some point in time that has negatively impacted you in some sort of way. And usually, it's a cost. But sometimes it can be brand and reputation. So when it comes down to it, these critical defects can obviously slow down development productivity, and it just reduces any time for innovation. No time to add that feature and functionality that you really need with your software system. And what happens is that your quality assurance teams or your testing teams, they're spending time on bug fixes instead of features or customer requirements. And Kurt even gave an example of how much bugs are costing us. And here's another data point of the U.S. economy is spending over $60 billion annually just on fixing bugs. But yet 80% of the development costs are consumed by software developments just identifying and correcting defects. So there's obviously some huge costs and huge numbers associated with just pure bug fixing. So when you take a look at traditional approaches to fixing these types of bugs, it really varies. And, you know, you get into code analysis that's performed after check-in. You get 80% of the defects that were introduced at the implementation stage is not necessarily getting addressed at that particular stage. There's code reviews, peer code reviews. Those are often used to help identify and clean up defects. But you get into the usual problems with code reviews. Nobody likes doing them. I dare you to find a developer who enjoys going on a code review and reviewing their particular code. No one likes that. And it just gets difficult to schedule. It's time-consuming, and like everything, and nobody likes doing them. So when it comes to bug detection, there's the reality of the traditional software development lifecycle. So everybody knows the V model with the software development, or what we have graphed here is your typical cost curve, where you have design, implementation, build, unit test, check-in, system build, system testing, QA, and ultimately release. This is an abbreviation of a software development cycle, but it gives you an idea of the different stages. Now, this is a typical type of graph that I'm sure many of you have seen before, the cost of defects. Everybody knows the cost of defects happen at as you go along in the software development cycle, they cost more. So obviously, doing something like releasing a software bug, especially in a safety critical system, it's going to cost you a ton more money. And take a look at the examples of the Ariane 5, the Therac 25, et cetera, or even ruin your reputation associated with that. So what's the cost associated with your reputation? Take another example, a very common one, is known as the Microsoft Zune, which is has a pretty infamous infinite loop, or what they call their leap year bug. And, you know, it, not only did it impact, you know, probably their sales, but it certainly impacted their competitive advantage. So I don't know to say that that certainly would have changed things, but I'm sure it didn't help. So the point of the cost curve is obviously the later you go down into the release, it's going to cost a lot more. And this certainly varies for individual safety critical systems. Obviously, a bug in your release certainly costs more than an actual web application, for example. But there's one general consensus is that once you go to release, the cost is more. Now, there's different techniques of finding bugs. If you find bugs before or during system testing QA, it's obviously a little bit cheaper than obviously at release. And where you obviously get into where the cheapest place to find a bug is obviously during your implementation. So as you're coding, if you're finding defects there, the cost is going to be significantly less. And then what's on top of that, where are those bugs actually found? Well, where they're actually introduced, they are introduced in the implementation stage. And, you know, studies have shown where most of them exist. Well, the bulk of them, 80%, are actually introduced while you're coding. So it's important to understand that bugs are reality, and where you're addressing them is absolutely crucial. So let's take a look at what you need to do to actually stabilize your code early during your software development lifecycle. And that results with just being able to check in clean code. Enable the developers to have the tools in their toolkit to be able to reduce the so-called rinse and repeat cycle of rework. So being able to always have to go through and their write code and then ultimately identify a defect, but that defect doesn't get identified until QA. Now they go back and they try to fix it. It's too late. It's too late in the cycle. Even if a defect is found right during the integration build, and this is not while the developers are coding, the developer has already moved on to something else. So they've gone to a point, even if it's an hour later, but worst case scenario, it's a week later or more, that the developer has already moved on to the next feature, functionality, or whatever bug fix, that when you're presenting them with some sort of defect right up front, are they sure that, do they even remember, exactly what they were working on in detail, as opposed to just being able to present immediately as they're typing, here is some particular bugs that have been identified, and so that you can get to a point of fixing them immediately, right while it's fresh in mind. So it's really important to enable the developers and provide the tools that the developers can work on right while they code. And, you know, this is really just about limiting the number of defects into the stream. This means higher quality code, less time. You know, we talked about the QA and testing, having to spend more time on fixing or identifying bugs as opposed to working on the customer requirements and actually figuring out what to do beyond that. And so this is allowing and reducing the time that QA spends on the testing, and so you can move forward with what really matters. So the solution here is really about automated static analysis tools, or what's called source code analysis. They're very similar in the names. Static analysis is a technique that you'd use with either source code or binary code, such as binary files from some Java classes, or you can just work directly from the source code. And you know, source code analysis or static analysis in general has really progressed over the last few years. It's really gotten into a stage of beyond your traditional lint-type tools. Now, for those who aren't familiar with lint is, lint has been around for decades now. And it's really been an augment for compilers, being able to find the extra issues associated with your code. And they've tended to be more on the syntactical semantical side of things. However, what is really important is that static analysis really progressed beyond that, getting into more of the control flow, data flow, all sorts of techniques that go far beyond what your traditional lint does. And because the lint type tools before gave a bad taste to a lot of developers, even though that it was a great tool that they could use, it still left a bad taste just because of all the false reports it would provide. And that was a significant problem. And static analysis or source code analysis tools have progressed beyond that point where they're far more accurate, providing a lot more details than you've ever had before with your traditional lint type tools. So what do you have available? Well, you're allowing the developers now to find defects right while you're coding. That's something that we call smart desktop, being able to provide right while you're in your favorite IDE, whether it's your Clips, your Visual Studio, whether it's your command line or some sort of tool, to be able to find your issues while you type. And that's really important. So it's identifying these critical issues in your code, such as your memory leaks, your buffer overflows, or your security vulnerabilities like buffer overflows, uninitialized variable, all the critical types of issues that you want to get visibility in and empower the developers to find to ultimately make higher quality code. And it goes beyond just your typical interprocedural type issues, your intra-procedural issues. These are issues that are found just locally in your code. Well, what you want to do is enable the developers, even in the context of they're working on a single file, to have the full knowledge of the entire system and to start finding defects with what is called interprocedurally. Interprocedurally means spanning through multiple files, multiple functions or methods in your system. So you can really drill down and understand the full picture of your software system and find those critical defects, again, right at the desktop. So it's really important to do what we call in-phase bug containment, just finding them right up front. And then with the static analysis tools, you have tons of other capabilities, such as just helping the developer be more productive. And how we can do that is with just providing the refactoring tools that are available. So a good example of a refactoring tool is very common in Java, to a lesser extent, C# code. But a lot of people are familiar where you can do extract function, rename variable, where you just want to rename a variable throughout your code, but understand the semantics of the code so it makes a smart search and replace as opposed to your typical find and replace that you have with any text editor. Or using something like extract method to create some code for you automatically with a click of a button, create a reusable container or reusable function or method in your system, all with a click of a button. And that's really what we talk about when it comes to refactoring. And that becomes really important for languages, especially C++, where it gets really difficult to do. Being able to extract a method, understand where you need to put the prototype and where you need to create the method appropriately, just with the click of a button. And these things extend beyond just extract function or inline variable. There's tons of very common refactoring. But as well, analyze, especially when you're talking C++, analyze your headers or optimize your headers so that you can remove transitive dependencies, remove unused includes, you know, help you minimize the build time, help you minimize the footprint of your software, all, again, with just a click of a button. Again, just providing the productivity that the developers need right up front. And then finally, one important thing is to really automate a lot of the code reviews. So we talked about code reviews and scheduling them and how they can be a bit of a pain and most developers don't like them. So how do we change that? How do we apply that? Code reviews are known to find and fix, are known to find issues in your code, and they're known to be helpful. So how do we take advantage of them? How do we get to a point where developers want to use them? And so providing with a more asynchronous code review allow you to change communicate with issues right at your own desk without having to schedule meetings. Use a tool to do that. And then provide more of a social media feel to it so that it gets into an environment that developers are familiar with, whether it's their Facebook wall or their Twitter feed, something that is just easy to use and is more conducive to really performing this actual code review. And then one of the things that you want to do is roll all this up so that you can get all the metrics and be able to answer some key questions, such as where are my greatest areas of reliability or security risk? Is my quality and security trending in the right direction? And how many defects am I injecting into my build? So again, it's really about using the tools and empowering the developer to have the tools such as the source code analysis or static analysis tool to find and fix their defects and to be able to be more productive using refactoring tools and leverage the tool domain with adding more simple, easier-to-use peer code review tools. So with that said, I'm going to pass it back over to Kurt.
Very good. Thanks, Alan. A lot of good information there. Our next speaker is Dr. Xavier Fornare, VP of Engineering Deputy at Esterel Technologies and is working on certification of code generators. Previously, he was head of the code generation development team. Before joining Esterel Technologies in 2000, he was a research engineer at INRIA, working on synchronous languages and their compilation into software and hardware. He holds a PhD in computer sciences from École des Mines, Paris, and a Master of Science in Computer Sciences from Nice Sophia University, France. Dr. Fornare, the floor is yours.
Okay, thank you, Kurt, for introduction. So I will talk to you about what we can do also to help developers to avoid all these software errors that Alan just talked about. So the main problem is in the safety critical system, it's really not possible to let the user find by themselves the errors. And because you have in safety critical problem all the lives that are here, and so not possible at all. And why do we have this defect in the final code? And the reason is we still have all this high pressure on the development and time to market to have the software ready. And often there is also reuse of code, and there is no deep analysis on is there any defects in that code. And for these reasons, new technologies and IDEs are there and try to check that code exactly, as Alan just explained a few minutes ago, to find a defect in that code. So we may have a matrix to understand the code complexity and its quality, and but we have also all these static analysis tools. And with these tools, we can either detect runtime execution errors before having the code running on platform, and we can also work on performance issues. And now the question is from where does this error come? So as we have seen, they come from the early phase of the development, and there are various sources for this. So you may have designer errors and misunderstandings, that is the specification correct with respect to the requirements? Does the designer correctly capture the requirement in his design? And then you have, of course, all the possible coding errors that may arise from the design and also from misunderstanding of the design specification. And there is also a point that is sometimes forgotten, is that you may have error in the compiler you use at the very end. And you have to know that, for instance, in avionics domain, people have to verify the object code because we cannot have credit and confidence in the object code that is generated by the compiler. And this is a real problem. So to try to overcome all these problems, maybe we can think to a new strategy. And this strategy is based on these following keys. So try to detect all the problems when they are created and not after. And then try to avoid coding errors just by no write code no more anymore. And this strategy can be implemented through an automatic and a certified code generation with rigorous software design specification. I mean that the input of the code generator must be formal design, and so this allow to have a correct specification with no ambiguities. And for this, we have some constraints that are the generated code must comply with domain constraint. That is, we will generate code that will respect the domain constraint, because if we intend to replace the code that is usually manually developed, this code has to follow some constraint given by guiding rules, and we must stick to them. And then, of course, the generated code must comply with the target compilers to be able to run on the final target platform. And for that, this code must be portable and without any adherence to any operating system or specific libraries. So our solution is the following. First, we have a SCAD language. So SCAD language is a language that has been defined, I would say, around 20 years ago by academics, and typically to address the safety problem of be able to have correct and rigorous designs. And the language allows to describe from simple equations, simple arithmetic equations, and it can go up to very complex state machines. So it allows for a designer to address on one side the, would say, basic mathematical equations, and then to address very complex applications, such as application we can find in a cockpit display system. Then, other feature of the language is it's strongly typed and well-founded. So that means that there is no ambiguity in the language, and then we can have static analysis on it. Because one of the things very important is all these static analysis tools need to rely on the semantics of the underlying language, and this is not so obvious. So it can be helped if the Angular language itself is formally defined. And then, of course, when we have this type of language with these properties, it can be easily tested when you have a model against the software recommend specifications. And then people can exchange the design they have done, and designer and tester and everyone that use this kind of specification are sure to share the same understanding of the design, which is very, very important. And then, thanks to this formal design, you can also have model test coverage, which is another feature which is very important, because it means that you can start very soon all the testing activities on directly your specification, and to assess that the code will be correctly, that all the behavior that are intended by the designer are fulfill actually the requirements. So when with using this type of language, the nice point is at the end you are sure that the model is a correct implementation of the requirement. Then the second point is, of course, to have the code generator. And what is very important is to have a code generator in which we can believe. Else, you have the same problem as the normal compiler. That means you may or may not believe its result. And for that, we have a compiler that has been developed and certified exactly the same way as the code that should be embedded in the final software application. That means there is exactly the same level of confidence you have in the output of that tool that people may have in the manually written code. And of course, the tool is delivered with all the necessary documentation so that the user can then prove that the tool fulfill the tool requirements. So with this kind of tool, then we can ensure that the code then is a correct implementation of the model. And then you can see that you can connect both, then you have the language that allow to have a correct implementation of the requirement within the model, and then the model will be correctly implemented by in the final code, and so that you have the requirement that are finally implemented correctly in the code. So what happened at the various levels? So at the top level, we may have designer errors and also miss out something problem, then we have coding errors, and finally, all this problem we may have with the compiler. And using this formal approach, then designer can concentrate all the efforts on the model level. At this model level, they can do static checks, they also can do simulation, and so they can do model coverage. So that means that really in the design phase, you can cover most of the activities that allow to verify the model and to ensure that it correctly implements the requirements. Then regarding the coding errors, well, now you have no more coding error because you are sure that the use of the code generator, which is certified, that the code generated is correct and is ready to be embedded. And now the final point, how we can solve it. Then the idea here is to say, okay, what I want to ensure is that the final object code that will get out my specific compiler for my specific platform is okay and I have no problem with it. And moreover, the point is that the C code that will be compiled is not any kind of C code. It's a C code that will be produced by that code generator. So for this, we propose a compiler verification kit, and that will propose a full set of tests that correspond to all the constructs in C that we generate, and all the constructs we have the top level language from the scale language. So that means that then we ensure that all the constructs that can be generated by the compiler can be run on the host platform or on the host developer, and to ensure that indeed the final compiler will work well with the code that we generate. So what about this generated code? So that it has some safety properties, of course, and this is one of the most important points of that code. So for sure, we have a correct typing of expressions. And the idea here is, as you know, C is a poorly typed language. While here, all these typing checks have been done at the scale level language, and you are sure that you cannot mix integer with, well, I would say pseudo-Boolean values in C. Here you have integer in scale and Boolean, and these cannot mix, and you will have proper C code at the end. Then you have also static memory allocation, so you are guaranteed by the code generation that you will have never malloc or dynamic allocation that are forbidden in the normal embedded code. Of course, since there are no allocation and we know exactly the structure of the code, then it's possible to determine which will be the final stack size. And this is also very important for embedded code since the stack is bounded. And bounded loops are also taken into account because from our language, we know exactly what is bound. So there is no infinite loops or things that will be dependent on some loops for which we can do no analysis at all. And then, of course, other feature like a regular structuring of the code, that means the code is clear, fully readable, no fancy construct, and so on. And we mean by a safe and restricted usage of global variables, as you know, using global variables may often be a problem because we'll never know who writes a variable or who reads it, and it's often a matter of complex guidelines. So then these variables are generated from, again, the high-level language scale for which we have defined very strict rules of use, and this is guaranteed to be correct and safe. So now let's have here a small example. So on the left, you have a small counter which is designed using the scale language. So scale is at the first point, is a graphical language because it has been designed to be close to all the algorithm you may find in applied control at the origin. And then here we have a simple counter where you have a pre which denotes memory and you have a plus, and then you have an initialization block. And this translates nicely into these two functions in C code. And you can see that the initialization operator here leads to different parts of the code that can be easily identified by the user. You can see that when there is a reset function, that we reinitialize this part of the code, and then when we start it to run, we look at if it is an initialization phase or if it's a normal execution code. So there is a nice traceability between the diagrams and the final C code, which is very important to provide evidence of the correctness of the code and of any traceability needs that the user may want to have. And now the second example is, well, I would like to take my counter, and now I would like to have it counting, and whenever I want to reset the counter and to start again counting from zero. And using the language, it is really easy. Just put it in the box and add a new wire and say reset. Each time this wire is set to true, then we reset the counter. And as you can see, then the code is really straightforward in that case. So the top level reset of the global operator function then will naturally call the reset function of the sub operator we have defined. And in the actual code now, we have added a simple test and say it's time for reset. Simply reset the underlying operator and then make it run. So again, all these constructs are clear, obvious, and can be easily understood if we want to read the code. So it's not obfuscated code at all. It's a crystal clear, I would say, code generation tool. So as a conclusion, I like the fact that having this kind of automatic code generation from deterministic, which is a very important point, and safe models allow to have all this design problem resolved at the source of the error and really at the beginning, and to perform all the verification activities in the early phases of the development process, which is of course the most cost efficient approach. And then using a code generator will ensure that we have no coding errors and that the source code that will be produced will exactly respect what we expect from an embedded applications. So we have also more information and details on, for each statement of our language, what is the corresponding generated C code and why all these constructs are considered as safe C code. So please, thank you for your attention, and Kurt, I'll leave you the phone.
Very good. So we are now to the Q&A portion of the section. Let's start with Alan. Here's a good question about any example of these new tools for static code analysis. They use lint and tried PolySpace, but had not very much luck with it. Can you talk about some of the static analysis tools that might be available for a better experience or more efficiency?
Well, certainly, and this is turning more into a shameless plug, but obviously Clockwork being a static analysis vendor, that's one of them. So what we try to really talk about here is first, second, third generation, there's sort of a level of where static analysis tools have gone, and certainly taking a look at you know, who falls into that those levels. Clockwork's certainly one of them, with our level of analysis going a lot deeper. So I encourage you to go to www.clockwork.com, taking note of the spelling of Clockwork, and you can get all the resources you need.
Okay. Very good. Here's one for Xavier. They want to know about the what standard the output code complies with. The compiler used for all the embedded products will target a particular processor, you know, and its instruction set. So there's a related question as well about are these tools available for different languages on one side, and then do they need to be targeting specific instruction sets on the other to do the validation?
So, okay, so regarding the output of the compiler, we generate C code, and now we are also having a new code generator for ADA code.
Okay.
So this is currently the two different outputs we have. Now, regarding targeting of a specific microprocessor, well, as we generate, I would say, portable C code, there is no specific construct within our generated C code, then it simply have to be passed into the target compiler to be compiled on the microprocessor. Now, the point is, let's say you may have a microprocessor that does not support arithmetic floating point, this case may happen. So the point is you will not be able to translate directly floating point from the model into this processor, and so that a user has to take into account this limitation in his model, and to design the model without using floating point, for instance. But then there is no limitation in the kind of target we can have. Regarding the standards, well, we have defined our subset, self-subset of C code, that means no pointers, no arithmetic on pointers, and things like that, no unions. And we have also demonstrated that our C code is compliant with MISRA 2004 standard, which is used in the automotive domain.
Okay. And so does the validation actually happen against the machine language output, or is it done against some sort of intermediate language that the compiler creates?
So the validation is mainly – so what we promote is to have as much as possible – the validation at the model level on the SCADE language.
Okay.
And to perform most of the activities there. But then, of course, we will have the full coverage of the model, but then the user will have to ensure that the final code integrates well within its final application.
Very good. Here's a question for Alan. You talked about static analysis tools and integration. Can you talk a little bit about how you can integrate them with things like code editors? Does it happen automatically in the background while you're writing the code, or do you have to do it as a separate step, you know, after you write a code block or a file, et cetera?
Yeah, the way that static analysis tools are working today, and this includes Clockwork, is to be able to really work right in the background while you're writing code. Think of it like your spell checker. So as you type, you get a little squiggly line telling you that there's some sort of spelling mistake, and even some cases fix it. Same type of analogy that static analysis tools are really trying to achieve is being able to, as you type, find and fix the issues. And that's certainly something that Clockwork is focusing on, is being able to really move as directly as possible into the developer cycle so that they get the feeling that they're finding these things automatically as they type. And really the whole goal here is really turn developers into rock stars.
I see. So in terms of exactly what it can identify, you talked about things like uninitialized variables, unused defines. Can it go as far as, you know, memory leaks, like some sort of Linux Valgrind thing happening automatically in the background, or array boundaries exceeded, things like that? Would it be that complicated?
Absolutely. It goes into quite a bit of depth, and this is the level of static analysis tools that we want to make sure that, you know, the audience knows how deep these things go compared to days in the past. So it includes things like memory allocation. It's really focused on allocation, deallocation type detection. But it spans from the very critical type things, null pointed to references, buffer overflows, array index out of bounds, these types of things that require quite a bit of formalism to understand and detect. But then, you know, as well, there's other additional benefits you get. So going from just the very critical, which are obviously the most important, and going into things that Clockwork can cover as well, is just going into maintainability issues or even coding standards, covering things like the MISRA standard. Those are available as well.
Okay, very good. Xavier, in slide 10 you referred to deterministic models. What applies in cases where the models contain uncertainties?
When you think about uncertainties, this is a thing that can be happened with a language like C. So the key is of using a SCID. We have formally defined all the language constructs. So the key point is that the design will be deterministic because there is no choice that can be taken by either the compiler or by some weird reason during execution. So let's give me an example. We have a construct which is a kind of the selection case, which it's like the switch case in C, and then in SCID we have user must provide all the information for all the cases. And so all the language has been designed to avoid all these uncertainties.
I see. All right. Here's a good question. They like the rock star attribute, and actually so did I. I think I'm going to go back to my desk this afternoon when I'm writing code, and I'll think of myself as a rock star. What was the name of the tool that you're describing? I guess why don't we spend a minute here to talk about, does it live within the Eclipse environment? Is it its own IDE?
So absolutely. It's something that is all of the above. So obviously what you want to do is extend and embrace existing environments. You're not going to convince developers who are working in their Eclipse to move over or Visual Studio to move over. Certainly, in some cases maybe you can, but you want to support those environments that are native to the developers. And I know there's tons of wars that developers will say that they'll never leave off their VI. and that's just the way it is.
Sure.
And so what you want to get from Clockwork is that direct integration into those tools. And so what we try to do is extend and embrace as much as we can the top end of the market. These are things like Eclipse, Visual Studio, IntelliJ, et cetera, all the Eclipse-based variants as well. And then as well provide command line versions. Those who are hardcore command line users be able to identify my defects while I'm in the command line, or even provide a GUI tool so I can look at this. So the answer is really all of the above.
All right. Xavier, what problems for validation occur even after SCADE model-driven tools? How would you troubleshoot if the model appears correct? So, and I suppose maybe you can even extend it to if you're including certain, you know, native libraries, how do you validate those kinds of things?
There is several answers. So, first of all, as much as possible, user must verify the design before generating any code. So then the model will be fully covered. All the tests can be passed, and we have. What I mean by coverage is coverage all the operators and all the behavior, and also having what we call MCDC coverage, that is testing all the decision and branches of the code. At the end, the user has to validate by himself or the external environment. So what we provide is a mean to have all this code generated from SCADE to be correct, but of course we cannot ensure anything of what the user can add from the outside, so it has to perform some verification. So of course, if its code is manually written, so in that case, you can use all the static analysis tools Alan is talking about.
Okay, very good. Here's another specific tools question for Alan. You talked a lot about checking in clean code. I know our company and probably others use things like nightly build bots and things like that. Do build bots fit into this somehow, or external auto run execution utilities that might check in, you know, check out stuff from a configuration management tool, et cetera?
Well, in fact, what you do want to do is have static analysis tools like Clockwork integrated right into your actual build process. And, you know, there's some good reasons behind that. One is you want to capture all the information of your build. How you automate that is up to you, and that really varies. And I would say almost everybody automates in some fashion. Because you can run the tools just via command line, you typically it's plugged into your existing build process or part of your CI infrastructure, whether you're using Jenkins or whatever. It's all just something that you can automate and script out according to your view. So when it comes down to it, you know, absolutely automation is key in terms of building.
Okay. A question for Xavier. When access to a processor or system requirements is necessary, does it have to be done through handwritten code? And how is this, if so, how is the code introduced into the model for validation?
Okay, so this is the two sides of the model. So the generated code itself is composed of mainly two top-level C functions, so one for resetting the complete application, because as it is embedded, it is supposed to run cyclically, and then the cycle function. And the other side, of course, it's when we need to access to the lowest layer, let's say drivers and things like that. So this part can be developed using a specific manually written C code, and that can be seen as a standard SCADE operators, but they have the notion of being imported. So that means the code is not defined within SCADE, but it's some imported code and C code for now, and this is the way it works.
Okay. Very good. Let's talk about development cycles and how these things fit for both presenters. So, you know, there's a lot of people doing agile development out there, and so maybe Xavier, you can start, and then Alan, you can comment afterwards about how this particular thing fits into an agile development cycle.
Well, there is a possibility to have this fit into an agile development cycle because the point is at any time a user can develop a part model and then start to have directly all the verification activities and to assess that they are part of the model that are correct, and then they can build on and to progress towards the final application.
Okay. Very good. How about you, Alan, in terms of, you know, Agile is something that you basically code, repeat, code, you know, how do you fit in the code analysis tools into an Agile development cycle?
Well, it's actually quite important. I mean, this is where tools like Clockwork and Static Analysis in general really plays well into the Agile world. And just as Kurt, as you're going off into, as you're describing, with you're working off multiple iterations. Every iteration, you're producing new features and functionality, and you have a working product after your current iteration. Well, the last thing you want to do is to be able to start your next iteration with your bug list. So it's absolutely crucial, and where Static Analysis play a big role is just really helping you to find and fix those issues so that you minimize and you're not spending your next iteration working on those bugs as dictated by the Agile process. So absolutely critical as to where Static Analysis tools fall with Agile.
I see. And you made an interesting comment during your presentation about integration of social media, and you used an example of Twitter and Facebook pages. Am I literally going to, like, have somebody post on my wall, you know, let's code review, here's line 366 right behind, you know, my wife saying, here's a really cool picture that I found on the Internet? Or how does that work? What's the future with integrating social media and code analysis cycles?
No, not directly, although I don't see why you couldn't.
Huh?
And maybe I hope one day we do get there. But really the end goal here is we've done some studies, and the studies are pretty clear as to what, not necessarily just developers, but certainly developers as a whole feel comfortable and know social media, and they're using social media. So they're very familiar with your Facebook wall. Let's face it, everybody's familiar with their Facebook wall.
Sure, absolutely, yeah.
And everybody's, and a lot more and more people are familiar with their Twitter feed. So it's trying to produce the tools and the same functionality that you're getting out of these social media gorillas right into tools that are available for developers. So it's just providing them the familiar environment to get things done and to enjoy that, and so that they don't see it as a chore, especially
right.
When it comes to peer core reviews.
Exactly. Very interesting. I guess, unfortunately, that's brought us to the top of the hour. I'd like to thank everyone so much for attending today's session. A big thank you to Alan Zukic and Dr. Fernari for taking the time to be with us and share some really important insights on code analysis, metrics, and documentation for safety-critical systems. I'd like you to invite you to enjoy our next two sessions coming up following this one. You can register at the same place. This eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen, and audio-only podcast will also be made available. You can do a web search with the keywords embedded space e-cast and find all of the Open Systems Media eCasts available for download as MP3s. Thank you all for attending, and have a great day.